at The Letters, Sportsnet's Blue Jays podcast with Arden Zwelling and Ben Nicholson-Smith.
Welcome to At The Letters on Sportsnet.ca and iTunes. Ben Nicholson-Smith here in Toronto and soon to be joined by Arden Zwelling and Shai Davidi, who are in Dunedin covering the Toronto Blue Jays as they begin spring training. Today, we'll discuss the big news out of Blue Jays spring training with both Shai and Arden. Jose Bautista talking contract, what he will and won't accept from the Blue Jays. And of course, Jay Bruce, rumors connecting him to Toronto in a deal that would potentially have sent Michael Saunders to Los Angeles. So lots to discuss there. Plus, we'll talk to Arden about Jesse Chavez, and we'll talk to Shai about the long-term prospects of the Toronto Blue Jays. All of that coming up on At The Letters.
Our hometown discounts, as they
that doesn't exist. Not in my world. In my eyes, I've given this organization a 5-year hometown discount already, so.
We're back on At The Letters and joined now by Arden Zwelling, who stands, as we speak, on the field at Florida Auto Exchange Stadium in Dunedin, Florida, where he is covering the Toronto Blue Jays and spring training, all things Blue Jays for Sportsnet.ca. Arden, how's it going?
Good. I think I found the least windy area so that we can actually hear what I'm saying. It's been an absolutely insane 36, 48 hours down here, as I'm sure everybody knows. Seems like every few minutes something new happens. There's a trade that is happening or is not happening. Somebody's telling the Blue Jays to pay them. It's just been wild.
Yeah, it really has been wild, and I think unexpected. What's the vibe been like down there for the first 2 days of spring training? Because it certainly hasn't been quiet following it from up here.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. You've done spring training before, and this is my fifth time doing it, and it's like definitely been the craziest start to a spring that I can remember, just in terms of just pure news. It's not even like we're kind of inventing stories or reaching or making looking for storylines. Like when Jose Bautista comes out and says what he said the other day, I mean, that is significant. And when you've got some very serious reports of a trade that apparently got to the point where it almost happened, got to the point where you're exchanging medicals, which is means that the terms have been agreed to, and then that trade ends up getting aborted. This is pretty eventful stuff. So there's certainly been quite a buzz down here, and quite a bit to chew on.
Yeah, there's tons to get to. Michael Saunders, of course, Jay Bruce, Jesse Chavez, but let's start with Bautista. I think it's probably the most interesting, probably the biggest story to come out of Dunedin so far, and you've been there watching it all unfold. What, when he stepped up and started to address you guys yesterday, what kind of comments were you expecting him to make? Was this even on your radar at all, that he might come out and talk about his contract discussion so openly?
Man, not even in the slightest, because we knew that obviously we were going to ask him about it, but it was told to us that Jose Bautista, we'll talk to you guys, this afternoon. And I just kind of, I didn't think of it as, Jose Bautista's call to press conference. I kind of thought of it as, it's his first press conference of spring. This is something that a lot of kind of the bigger name guys will do, is, instead of having each guy come up to them individually, they'll just get, knock it all off right off the start and just have everybody in one big scrum and do it. But, Jose Bautista clearly had a pretty direct message that he wanted to float and that he wanted to put out there. And he did it. So I think everybody was pretty gobsmacked just, as soon as he came out and said, I told them my terms. I told them, how much it's going to take. I'm not going to negotiate. It's definitely a different stance than, we maybe are used to seeing. But, Jose Bautista is a different guy. And he's, in a very unique position where, he can do something like this. And, so absolutely, I mean, to answer your question, going into it, I don't think anybody was expecting that was going to happen. But with Jose, you kind of have to expect the unexpected.
You definitely do. And he made some pretty frank comments. Just the idea that a hometown discount doesn't exist, I think, says a lot about where his head is at. And he clearly has no intention of giving the Blue Jays anything resembling a hometown discount, as is his right. And I think basically that's a smart move from his point of view. But where does that leave the Blue Jays? If he doesn't want to leave any money on the table, what kind of position does this put the team in, and where do you see the Toronto Blue Jays going forward in this as they try to make sense of these negotiations themselves?
Well, yeah, I mean, he really kind of just shifts the spotlight to them and really put it on, you know, the Jays front office and in a lot of ways on Blue Jays ownership with the, you know, if you really read in closely to his comments, you know, so you kind of see reports coming out today, which Jose Bautista obviously has denied, that he, you know, was looking for 5 years, $150 million. You know, Shai Davidi went into the clubhouse right away and asked him about that. Jose Bautista said it was false. So, you know, until we really know, you know, what he's asking, and I don't know if we ever really will know that. I mean, it's hard to kind of put a finger on, you know, what the front office is thinking, what their strategy is here, how they're kind of approaching this. I mean, I don't know. It's interesting. Like, have you ever seen anything play out like this, you know, this publicly?
I think the Albert Pujols talks come to mind, and obviously I was watching that from a distance, but you know, something Jeff Blair is writing about for Sportsnet.ca this week and the way the Cardinals navigated that in 2011 when they had a bigger pending free agent than Jose Bautista, Pujols at that point in his prime and really an elite hitter, one of the best hitters in the game and in recent history at that point. And the Cardinals went through the season as Pujols was nearing free agency, won the World Series, Pujols left, signed for huge money with the Cardinals. So that's the model, and it's a tough one to replicate. But I guess, in a sense, you could look to that as a model, but in another sense, it's kind of dangerous to say, oh, the Cardinals did it this way. We're just going to copy that, and it's going to work out for us the same way.
Well, yeah, and it's so different when you look at, you know, what... I don't know if, you know, the Cardinals are going to be retiring Albert Pujols' number at any point, but I do think, you know, the Toronto Blue Jays could put Jose Bautista on the level of excellence tomorrow, and nobody would really bat an eye about it. You know, Jose kind of even dropped in his scrum that, you know, if I have another, you know, 4 or 5 years like I did, I could be up on that level of excellence. And he said, does that have value? Yes, I think it does. You know, I tell Jose Bautista they could put him up there tomorrow.
Yeah.
You know, he's already in pretty rarefied air as far as, you know, Blue Jays contributors to this franchise. So it's such a unique situation. It's hard to kind of, you know, I'm sure Blue Jays front office is, you know, having the same, you know, debates and conversations that we're going to be having about, you know, how do you kind of approach something like this? How long do you let something like this fester? What do you say publicly? You know, what do you maybe float through, you know, certain reporters in the game? It's going to be really interesting to see just how they handle this.
You've been talking for a while, and we've discussed it on At the Letters a number of times, about the idea that there is more than just the numbers when you're talking about a player who means this much to a franchise. Do we have any sense of how that off the field impact, the marketing, even the emotional attachment that fans have to a player who has been so dominant offensively for so many years, do we have any sense of how that might shape these talks, if at all?
You know, it's something that kind of keeps coming up. It's something that came up with Ross Atkins today, and you know, anybody who saw Ross Atkins' press conference, you know, knows that he didn't really answer anything too directly. But, you know, he certainly acknowledged that plays a factor in these negotiations. So I think that's why I kind of, you know, keep calling them unique, because it absolutely is. And that kind of, you have to somehow quantify not only what Jose Bautista has done for this franchise, but what he could do for it if he were, you know, in a Blue Jays uniform for the rest of his career, say, or even just for the next 4 or 5 seasons. Like, what he'll do for you in terms of merchandise sales, what he'll do for you in terms of, you know, community outreach, in terms of Latin American relations, and you know recruiting players from the Dominican Republic who see Jose Bautista spending, you know, a decade in Toronto and having great success in Toronto and getting paid, frankly, in Toronto. You know, what kind of effect that'll have, you know, what other value he kind of brings to your franchise other than on the field production. I don't know how to quantify that. I wonder if you do.
No, I definitely don't know how to quantify that. Yeah, I think that's a pretty tough one. I'm hoping. Okay, I don't know where you're gonna land on this one, but I'm hoping you can help me shoot down the notion that this point of discussion and this this press conference that Batista was a part of will somehow be a distraction to his teammates or should be viewed as this selfish act. And, you know, I think that some people view it that way, and I can see why they do, but at the same time, this is so far removed from the actual grind of the regular season. And I think that baseball players are so used to tuning out distractions that I don't necessarily think this is going to distract the other members of the team. But you're there, you're seeing how this is playing out, and you have a much better sense of how that might be distracting or not distracting these guys than I do. What's your sense of how that's playing out?
If I'm a baseball player, I love what Jose Bautista is doing. You know, I love that he's coming out and saying, yeah, I have a certain value. I know what that value is. I know how much money you make off me in this lineup and my presence with this franchise. I want to be compensated fairly. As a baseball player, I absolutely love that. I don't think any player is saying, always being selfish or, like, you know, always, you know, putting himself first, this and that. I mean, every ball player wants to get paid. Every baseball player wants to be in the position that Jose Bautista is in. I mean, you know, if anything, his pending free agency is only going to motivate him to play terrifically for the Blue Jays this year, to stay on the field and put together his best effort going into, you know, really his first, you know, his first free agency. That's going to be something that as a Blue Jays player, you're going to love. The fact that this guy's going to be going out, not to mention Edwin Encarnacion as well. The fact that these guys are going to be going out and, you know, really trying to produce and really trying to help this team, you know, win a World Series. Because, you know, all those things, you know, Jose Bautista having a terrific year, the Blue Jays going into the playoffs, and potentially winning a World Series, that all just helps his case. And that all just pushes his number higher and higher and higher. So I think you're absolutely right that, it, you know, it's not a distraction and it's not something that guys are, you know, kind of whispering about or, you know, feeling, resentful about. You know, I think as a player, you love it.
Yeah, and I think off-field discussions can become a distraction. I mean, if you're on a horrible team, you have one ace pitcher, and there are rumors surrounding this guy at the July 31st trade deadline, I can see how that actually would be distracting. But in this case, these guys have a common purpose. They're trying to win. They have 5-6 weeks to get ready for the season. And I think that unity of purpose is going to bring them together to the point where they don't need to actually worry about what this guy or that guy is saying. In fact, they might have already heard it on the team bus or in the clubhouse.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that anybody, you know, that knows Jose Bautista well in that clubhouse would have been surprised. I mean, they've probably heard him talking about this for a long, long time. You know, this is just the first time they've really said it publicly to reporters and really floated it out there. So, you know, I totally agree with you that, you know, the Blue Jays are a different position, you know, for, yeah, absolutely. If Jose, if this, you know, team was going to, you know, if going to lose 60 or sorry, going to win only 60 games this year and, you know, Jose Bautista had this, you know, pending free agency and all this stuff, that could totally be a distraction. But for a team that's a legitimate playoff, you know, threat, I really don't see it being a big issue.
So that's the one huge topic that's kind of jumped up in the last couple of days. Let's move on to Jay Bruce and the Michael Saunders trade talk that happened in the last, what, 24 hours or so. Really on the first night of spring training, there were these reports that the Blue Jays were getting close to a three-team trade where Jay Bruce would come to Toronto and Michael Saunders would go to LA. Apparently, concerns over the medicals of a Toronto prospect prevented the deal from going through. So here we are, same roster. But when you saw all that chatter coming up last night, what was your first reaction to all of that discussion? And how did you see Jay Bruce as a potential fit for the Blue Jays?
You know, I started to dig into it and try to, you know, not convince myself that Jay Bruce was a fit for the Blue Jays, but at least kind of justify it and see why this is happening. And you know, we had heard through Shai Davidi that, you know, the Blue Jays had tried to acquire Jay Bruce a couple of weeks ago, you know, and that this is clearly a target for them. And there's clearly somebody in that front office who is pounding the table for Jay Bruce. You know, see, so when you look at it, you know, they don't really have, you know, a big left-handed bat in the lineup right now. So, you know, that helps, I guess, having that left-handed power. At Rogers Center is certainly a nice thing. I guess the durability. Because, you know, even though Jay Bruce, you know, hasn't been fantastic over the last, one and a half seasons, I guess, Michael Saunders hasn't played at all over the last one and a half seasons. So at least you have a guy with an ability to not put up a good OBP. It's an interesting fit. You know, you look at, you know, he's had a low batting average on balls in play for the last couple of seasons. Maybe the Blue Jays see some rebound there. You know, there's the Brooke Jacoby, you know, connection. This is a guy who, you know, Jay Bruce had his best success with Brooke Jacoby as his hitting coach. So maybe they see something in his swing that he can correct. You know, there's any multitude of reasons why Toronto has targeted him. But right now, it looks like it's not going to happen.
Do you think they'd be a better team with Jay Bruce as opposed to Michael Saunders?
If the money was neutral?
Yeah, say the money's a wash. Say the money's a wash.
If the money's a wash, I mean, it's kind of a coin flip, really, assuming Michael Saunders is healthy. I mean, if Michael Saunders isn't going to be healthy, then you have to go with Jay Bruce. But, you know, talked to Michael Saunders today, said his knee feels great. He's been sprinting at full speed. You know, he's been taking BP and, you know, running around the outfield. He said it feels like he didn't have surgery at all. And, I mean, you know, the thing that people get confused about with Michael Saunders is they think that he was out all of last year with the surgery, but he was out with the bone bruise, which is something that came as a result from, you know, what doctors would call a traumatic incident, which is when he tore up his knee stepping on that sprinkler head. So he suffered a bone bruise there that was asymptomatic at the time. He tried to come back, and it developed symptoms, and it, you know, he really had to let that thing heal. And bone bruises can really be, you know, bastards in a way. Like, they can really take a long time to heal, and the only way to heal them is through rest. So, you know, if Michael Saunders is truly healthy, you know, the difference for me between him and Jay Bruce, really, it's the money. I'd much rather pay Michael Saunders what he's going to be making for his production than pay Jay Bruce what he's going to be making for what you can assume his production might be based on his last 1.5 years. But I'd be very interested to hear you answer this question as well.
I think they're similar players in the sense that they're both left-handed hitting outfielders and they both have some power. Bruce has more power and they both walk about 10% of the time and strike out about 25% of the time. And so you're really looking at similar offensive profiles. But to me, I think the difference lies in Bruce's durability and the fact that we've seen him put together elite MLB seasons. So, you know, if you had to pick one or the other, regardless of price, I think Bruce would be the choice. But, you know, I think, you know, Saunders certainly has that ability. There's just the floor, like we saw last year, where there's that possibility that he's going to end up having more knee problems. And I read your latest piece at sportsnet.ca, and clearly he's optimistic, but you can never rule out that possibility until you see him play a full season.
But when you look at the Blue Jays lineup, and there's absolutely no shortage of power right now, and you can always make the argument that you can never have too much power, but, you know, Michael Saunders, when he's been healthy, has put together some, you know, better OBP numbers than Jay Bruce has. He's walked more than him and he's struck out less than him recently. Although Jay Bruce brought down his strikeout percentage last year, you know, he's making more contact. It wasn't exactly good contact. Don't you think that Michael Saunders maybe fits a bit better into this lineup right now than Jay Bruce?
I think the player who fits best is the one who hits best. And I think that really Bruce hasn't been a good hitter in the last couple of years and neither has Saunders. So in both cases, you're looking for a return to form. And what we've seen from Bruce in the past is he has that 30 home run power. I just think as an offensive player, Bruce brings you a little bit more upside. And we haven't seen it from him for a variety of reasons the last couple of years. But I don't know. I mean, Saunders, he has the track record of having played all three outfield positions. And maybe historically he was a better defender. But and with Bruce, if I'm buying one of those two as an offensive player, I would personally lean toward Bruce.
That's fair, and the reason Jay Bruce, you know, has such a big salary is because he was really, really good for the Cincinnati Reds. That, you know, at one time, you know, he looked like he was going to be, you know, a real linchpin of that offense for years to come, and things kind of fell apart for him. You know, a bit ironically, I guess, or I don't think it was ironic, but what, you know, whatever the word is for it, was that it was actually a knee injury that kind of derailed Jay Bruce for a little bit there, and right. You know, ever since that happened, he's had trouble getting his power numbers back to where they were. You know, he's had trouble with, you know, getting his line drives back to where they were. And, you know, you'll hear a lot of guys talk about how a knee problem can really mess up your swing, especially as a power hitter. You know, so much of your power comes from your bottom half and comes from your legs. And so maybe there's something there with Jay Bruce. I mean, it's so hard to speculate and to know, you know, there's been a thousand pieces written about, you know, what happened to Jay Bruce? Like, why has this guy entered you know, kind of late 20s as he kind of lost what he had before. It's absolutely an interesting debate to have between the two of them. But for me, really, the money is what separates it.
Yeah, no, I think that's a big difference maker for sure. And it looks as though Saunders is going to be the guy, at least for now, in Toronto. How's he looking? Have you gotten the chance to see how he's moving physically and how he's hitting it all?
Yeah, I mean, I saw him take BP, and he looks like Michael Saunders, you know? He looks fine. I haven't really seen him do much in the outfield because I just haven't been around them when they've been doing that stuff. But he looks fine. He says he feels fine. I mean, Ross Atkins and John Gibbons both said that, you know, his knee checks out and everything's great with him. I mean, it wasn't his medical that held up this trade, which is what's kind of what must be kind of depressing for Michael Saunders, yeah. That as soon as, you know, it came out that it was a medical that held up this trade, everyone assumed it was his,
yep.
You know, and people were making jokes on Twitter about how long it must have taken to download his medicals and things like that, and when it really had nothing to do with him. So, I mean, he looks fine, but, you know, there were times last year where he said he was fine and he looked fine, and it turned out he actually wasn't. So, you know, it's so without, you know, actually having access to the medicals, it's so hard to really know. Yeah, I know that, you know, I really kind of hope that Michael Saunders has a full healthy season, whether it's with Toronto or with another team, simply because he's a first-rate guy and he really truly does want this. He's very passionate about the game and about his place in it, and you know, he called this kind of a redemption year for him, and it really is important to him that he plays this season, and you know, that, you know, to him, it's very important that he does it in Toronto. I'm sure that, you know, if he was an LA Angel, he would learn to like that too. But for him, it seems really important that, you know, he does show the Blue Jays that, you know, what they thought they were getting when they traded for him last offseason.
You can read your piece on Michael Saunders on sportsnet.ca. And while you're there, you can click through to find the piece on Jesse Chavez, which is also worth a read, and a piece that I wanted to ask you about before we let you go, Arden. It's interesting. You know, you look at Chavez, and he's someone who has kind of had really, really strong splits in his career. Strong starts and not so much success in the second half of the season. And he's looking to make adjustments this year. It sounds like one of those adjustments that he's trying to make is going to have to do with throwing an effective cutter this year.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's funny, when Jesse Chavez was first a Blue Jay, that's when he really started to learn the cutter, because he was finding that, you know, he was just so dependent on his four-seam fastball when he couldn't really locate his breaking stuff for strikes that, you know, as he put it to me, you know, hitters knew what was coming. It wasn't hard to get in my head as a pitcher, because you knew that if I couldn't throw my breaking ball for a strike, you were getting a fastball. It was probably going to be pretty flat over the plate, and that's why he kind of got hit. And that's a time when, you know, he was still throwing with pretty good velocity. I mean, if you can kind of look back at, you know, when he was a younger guy, he was getting it up to 94, 95, 96. Now he backs off of the velocity a bit, really uses that cutter a lot to move the ball off the barrel of the bat, uses his sinker off of that cutter. I mean, rarely throws his four-seam fastball anymore. And, you know, it's kind of, in Oakland for the last few years, it's been a process for him of kind of, you know, reinventing himself, so to speak, and making those adjustments and changes and learning how to pitch as a starter and like this. And, you know, similarly to Michael Saunders, I mean, he's a very thoughtful guy, Jesse Chavez. He really considers this stuff deeply. He really thinks about the game. I mean, I think he'll probably have, just from talking to him, you know, as briefly as I have, I could see him having a future in the game as a coach, because he really does break this stuff down so much and really does consider it so deeply. So it'll be interesting, you know, how he fits into this kind of competition, the starter spot, whether, you know, he continues his, you know, his history of having a really hot start. You know, it's something the Blue Jays, I'm sure, going to consider, the fact that this guy has always come out of the gates really well. Maybe, you know, we want to use him as a starter early and then move him back in the bullpen later on in the season.
Yeah, I remember when we were talking to Susan Slusser about Jesse Chavez, she made the point that he had a potential future as a coach. And another thing that she pointed out about Chavez is that he's a really skinny guy, someone who tries to put on weight during the offseason to prepare for the grind of the season. When you were talking to Jesse Chavez, did you see the same kind of skinny guy that we've seen clips of, or had he bulked up a la Aaron Sanchez?
He's certainly not an imposing figure. And it's kind of interesting, because you'll see it when you get down here in a week or so. It's like the Blue Jays have brought in some absolute like mountains of men into this team. Like Roberto Hernandez, excuse me, is absolutely massive. Brad Penny, Gavin Floyd, there are some big boys in this clubhouse. It's no longer kind of, you know, it's no longer as, I don't know, it's a football team basically is what they've assembled this year. Jesse Chavez doesn't fit that role. You know, I didn't talk too much about the weight, and you know, I know Susan Slusser spoke to that a lot. I mean, and spoke to how maybe that had something to do with the fact that there was a dip in his performance kind of midway through the past two seasons. You know, Jesse Chavez basically told me 2 years ago, he felt like he was having a great season. He felt like he was really putting it together. And then his team traded for Jeff Samardzija and John Lester. And, you know, when your team has, you know, that many good pitchers, somebody has to go to the bullpen and he was that guy. And then last season, you know, he felt like he was having a great, you know, couple of months to start the year again. And then he had some mechanical troubles. You know, his hands started to kind of get away from himself and he started making a lot of adjustments to try to fix what he was doing. His cutter was getting kind of side to side, as he calls it, and he was trying to make it sharper and tighter. And in order to do that, he stopped throwing his curveball, started throwing a slider, and that just messed him up even more. And eventually he was shut down with a fractured rib. So he didn't mention the weight at all. He seemed to think that it was, you know, mechanical issues and really circumstances that led him to be taken out of the rotation each of the last two seasons. You know, it's going to be so interesting to see how him, Gavin Floyd, Drew Hutchison, Aaron Sanchez, I mean, how that all works out with this last rotation spot with the Blue Jays. I mean, has your thinking on it changed or evolved at all over these first few days of camp over, you know, which direction you think the Blue Jays might be leaning towards going in?
I think Sanchez is going to get a nice long look for that rotation spot. And I think Chavez, Hutchison, I mean, you've got to take a look at them too, because as much as we make the discussion about the five-man rotation and who's going to get that final spot, as if there are going to be no opportunities beyond those five spots, we all know that in the course of the season, Chavez is going to get, what, 10 or 15 starts? Hutchison, I'd be stunned if Drew Hutchison doesn't get the chance to start 10 or 15 games this year. So, I think that for now, and it, of course, it's a discussion worth having and a storyline worth following, but for now, I would guess that Sanchez has that inside track, and we'll kind of see where that leads.
Well, yeah, because Sanchez kind of has those long-term consequences, you know, that come out of what you choose to do with him right now, you know. Jesse Chavez is a guy who's been, you know, moved back and forth before. You know, Gavin Floyd's a guy that you don't have a ton invested in as an organization. Drew Hutchison, you know, a young guy, but I mean, performance has kind of dictated where he's at in his career right now. Aaron Sanchez, a guy with a ton of upside, a really live arm. And, you know, John Gibbons was speaking to it the other day, and he was saying, you know, Aaron Sanchez is really our focus right now, deciding where we put him. And it's absolutely not an easy decision because it's going to affect his future. If you start him as a reliever this season, it's going to be a lot to ask to get him to, you know, to get him stretched out down the line this year. And if you start him as a starter, you're sacrificing a pretty good arm from your bullpen. So, I mean, I totally agree with you. I think Aaron Sanchez, the decision of the fifth starter coming out of spring training, it's absolutely going to revolve around him.
Yeah, I think it really will. Well, Arden, we'll be looking forward to lots more articles, videos, tweets, radio appearances, podcast appearances. What else are you doing down there? It's going to be a busy few days. We'll be following very closely. And thanks, of course, for making the time today.
I'm not sleeping, I can tell you that. That's the thing I'm not doing. But you can find me in many places for the next week or so.
Awesome. Thanks, man.
Second deck shot, home run for Jay Bruce, number 23 on the year for Bruce. His second home run of this series, his third home run on the road trip, and the Reds break through first, taking a 1-0 lead. And he powers into this ball. That's a no-doubter, way up there. Santana will just take a turn and look. The second deck shot of this game for Jay Bruce. Giving number 24 on the year. And it's now a two-run game at 5-3.
We're back on At the Letters and joined by Shai Davidi, who is in Dunedin, Florida, and who has been extremely, probably unexpectedly busy these last couple of days, Shai.
Well, not in the ways that we turned out to be busy. You know, we expected there to be a lot of action and a lot of storylines this year, but boy, it sure opened with a bang.
Yeah, it really did. In fact, a couple of them, Jose Bautista addressing the media and expressing his stance on contract talks and what it would take to stay here in Toronto as a member of the Blue Jays, and, of course, the rumored near trade for Jay Bruce. So between that, there's a lot to get to. I do want to start off, though, by asking you more broadly and setting aside those two major storylines. Has anyone or anything stood out to you the first couple of days? There are a lot of new faces around Dunedin, Florida. Anything jump out to you as you've been reporting on the team?
You know, this is a little subtle thing, and it's something that's going to get lost a little bit. But the number of pitchers in camp, I believe it's 32, maybe 33, and just the number of bodies that aren't just kids, guys who might fit in on the team, is pretty interesting, especially considering the Blue Jays went into this offseason with sort of nobody on their, very few people on their pitching staff at the major league level, at the AAA level. They had a lot of holes to fill. And, you know, you just walk into that clubhouse right now, and it's always busy at this time of year when camp's just starting. But I mean, there are a lot of dudes in there. There are a lot of people who think that they've got a real opportunity to make this team. Depending how it shakes out, they may be right. So, I mean, that's one thing that's stuck out a little bit to me, is that, you know, they do actually have some depth. Now, is it effective? Are the guys going to be able to get outs? Well, we'll find out. But it's not as thin as it was and as was feared when, you know, we first started talking about the team in October, November.
Yeah, interesting. I think at that point they had something like 13 or 15 pitchers on their entire 40-man roster. So, scary
right.
stuff. Jose Bautista. Right. So that's the big story and the place that we can start here. Were you expecting him to really make headlines the way he did yesterday when he stepped out and started addressing you guys?
I guess I'll put it this way. I expected him to make headlines, but the specific stance that he took was a bit of a surprise. You know, the fact that he was so forthright about it too, I thought was a pretty clever move by him, because what happens oftentimes in these negotiations is that, you know, teams are always in a position where it's like, oh, we want to sign him, but we couldn't make it work, and somehow the player ends up being the bad guy. And in this instance, you know, Bautista's dropped the ball firmly in the Blue Jays court and said, look, I told him what I think I'm worth. This is my number, and it's up to them. Basically, take it or leave it. And that approach is really interesting, because now the heat is on the Blue Jays, and to a certain portion of the fan base, whatever the outcome will lie the result fault for the outcome, especially if he doesn't sign, will lie at the feet of Blue Jays, not necessarily for Jose Bautista. So it's a pretty clever maneuver, a pretty clever ploy in that regard, and we'll see where it goes.
So when Bautista says, I'm not willing to negotiate, I don't think there should be any negotiation, meaning back and forth between him and the team, how literally do you think we should take that? In this age of contracts where you have opt-outs and you have deferrals and you have all kinds of creativity between teams and players to find a middle ground, is it really that simple that if the Blue Jays don't meet Bautista's price, he's going to hit free agency?
I wouldn't think so. But, you know, knowing him, I wouldn't take it lightly. Now, if the Blue Jays say get to 90% of his ask or something like that, would he not consider it? I'm sure he'd consider it. And, you know, my guess on, like, the best way for the Blue Jays to approach something like that would be to say, look, Jose, this is what we can do right now. And this is what we've got. If you're willing to take it, great. If not, we understand. And to some degree, throw the ball back into his court, just the way he's thrown the ball into their court. So that might be the return volley. But in terms of sitting it down and throwing different concepts and all the typical back and forth that happen in negotiation, I don't think there's any room for that. And he was pretty explicit. He said that there were a couple attempts at some conversation, and in his words, and this is the quote, he told them, this is not happening. So I wouldn't doubt his word. That being said, if the Blue Jays gave him something that was legitimately worth considering and said, you know, like, this is what we can do, tell us what you think, I'm sure that he would give it some serious thought.
Where does this rank on the spectrum of distractions for you? I mean, it's the beginning of spring training. Games haven't even started yet. So you could make the case that really this is pretty far removed from anything that actually matters in the field. On the other hand, it's the first day, things are just getting started, and he is maybe the franchise player for a team that's defending a division title. So do you think that this is a distraction for the rest of the team, or does this kind of pass them by and they have other stuff to worry about?
I think it's both. But to me, the reality of it is that this is a bit of a cautionary tale, you know, because there are a lot of different things that are going on right now. And you know, Edwin Encarnacion isn't in camp yet. He's in the same room. The Blue Jays have 8 other pending free agents. There's the blend of the new regime and the old regime, and the coaching staff, a season with a ton at stake that could really, in some ways, define or settle what direction the Blue Jays go in the seasons to come. So there are a lot of elements. There's going to be a lot of external distraction, a lot of potential pitfalls that can result from that. And so to me, this isn't just about what it feels like right now. This could be a snapshot of what the Blue Jays are going to have to deal with, because a lot of these issues are going to continually resurface. So if they have all these things going on, are they going to be able to insulate the clubhouse and ensure the commonality of pursuit of a team goal doesn't get affected when there are reasons for interest to diverge? And that's going to be a real challenge for this team, especially if adversity hits. Now, if they keep winning and everything's hunky-dory, all these other things get swept away. But when things start to go sideways, that's when you can really get the repercussions of it.
What about Encarnacion? Do you expect that he's going to meet with the media in a similar way and clarify his stance at all? I mean, so far we've heard that through his agent that this is something he'd like to resolve by opening day, one way or another. So do you expect him to elaborate on that? Do you expect those talks to pick up while the Blue Jays and Bautista maybe remain a little bit further apart from one another?
They're very different guys. And Edwin Encarnacion is not someone who loves the limelight. He's not someone who likes attention. And my guess is that when he reports, he's going to talk about how much he wants to stay in Toronto, how much he loves being a Blue Jay, and that he doesn't want to negotiate in the season because he found it a distraction last time. I think that's going to be a very simple message that he delivers, and I don't expect there to be much beyond that. Just for the simple reason is that he's not someone who relishes that spotlight. He likes to just do his job, and he's quiet and reserved, where, you know, Bautista, as we all know, is brash and happy being the center of attention, so, or at least comfortable being the center of attention. So because of that, I'd expect a different approach, but you never know. I mean, this is, again, there could be some strategy at play here too, because a lot of people are trying to get their share of the Blue Jays pie, and maybe after the approach of Jose Bautista, you know, the Encarnacion camp circles back and says, hey, maybe we need to do something like this too.
You mentioned that Blue Jays pie, and we all know it's finite, especially at this point in the spring when you've basically committed so much of your money to the upcoming year's team. So I think that's why the Jay Bruce trade discussions surprised a lot of people, because he earns almost $10 million more than Michael Saunders. And that's a substantial amount of money for any team to take on, especially a team that has a budget in place. So why do you think the Blue Jays were in a position to consider trading for Jay Bruce? And do you think some of that would have had to do with ultimately evening out some of that money with the Reds?
It's possible that there could have been an element of evening out the contracts with the Reds and the Angels. It's also possible that the Blue Jays had another move or two in mind in order to shuffle off some of the money from the roster or to reallocate some money on the roster, or maybe they have more money than we think. And all those are possibilities because, you know, once you factor in there's zero to three players, you know, they could be in the 137, 138 range, and maybe they have capacity to go beyond 140 and are just keeping some of that money around, deciding what to do with it the way the Blue Jays did last season and, you know, executed their trade deadline build-up with their stash of cash.
How much of an upgrade, if at all, do you think Jay Bruce is setting money aside over Michael Saunders?
Okay, so here's how I look at it. You have to ask yourself a couple things. Is Jay Bruce going to give you more games played than Michael Saunders? And the answer is quite possibly, maybe, probably, just based on track record.
Yeah.
Two, he goes into the season without concerns about his knee, and Michael Saunders keeps on saying his knee is fine, and he apparently, you know, concerns about medical concerns in his instance weren't apparently behind any of the issues scuttling the trade, so we should take him at his word for that. But based on strictly performance, you know that you're going to get home runs or sort of three true outcomes from Jay Bruce, but can you get beyond that? And his ceiling may be a bit higher than Michael Saunders is, because the one thing, when you think back to when Jay Bruce had his great season in 2011, 2012, who was the hitting coach in Cincinnati? It was Brooke Jacoby. And they apparently had a very good relationship together. Now Brooke Jacoby's with the Blue Jays, and if they reunite, maybe he's able to unlock some of what was lost for Jay Bruce in recent years, where, you know, he continued to hit for power, but a lot of the rest of his game seemed to slip, or at least number-wise, it definitely did slip. And maybe he can get him back to that point and make him a truly productive player. Now, the other benefit that Bruce gives you is that he is a left-handed power bat, and Michael Saunders is a left-handed hitter who has some power, but he doesn't have the home run power of Jay Bruce. And maybe that gives you a potential to balance out some lineups, maybe gives you an extra threat against tougher right-handed pitchers, and offers you some different things. And beyond that, the one other thing that Jay Bruce gives you is that he gives you the opportunity for some club control in 2017. He's got a club option for $13 million. That would give the Blue Jays at least two big league outfielders under club control in the 2017 season. And, you know, doesn't replace Jose Bautista, but may soften the blow if he departs and gives them an opportunity to shorten some of their needs for next year.
Yeah, and you've pointed out a number of times that really this team, as we know it, is going to look a whole lot different next year when guys like Saunders potentially and Bautista and Encarnacion, Jesse Chavez, Brett Cecil, they all hit free agency if they're not extended. So how much is all this discussion, Bruce and potentially acquiring someone who has extended control, Bautista, the possibility of extending someone beyond this upcoming season, how much of all of this is geared towards setting up a future for the Blue Jays where they actually have the bodies they need in place beyond this season?
Well, that's certainly a consideration, but you know, the big picture consideration here is, and this is what the Blue Jays have to settle on, where are they going in 2017? And it's possible that the answer may be completely contingent on 2016. And if they, say, get 3.5 million fans in the seats and get into the postseason and generate all kinds of revenue to the point that they're pumping the money back into the team, well, at that point, a $160 million payroll is a lot more reasonable. And all of a sudden, okay, yeah, you can certainly fit in a Jose Bautista into your contract, into your payroll structure in that way, in a way that you couldn't if you're at 140. So that's one consideration that has to go on. And, you know, the Blue Jays are right now caught in a situation where they have to sort of play this double game. It's like they have to be ready to go in a number of different directions, because it's 40% of the big league roster that's eligible for free agency, and they've got very few internal options in their farm system. And, you know, that's where the comeuppance for last year's trade deadline, it begins to really show up. because they don't have a ton of inventory at the minor league level to plug holes or to use as chips in trades. And that really complicates the Blue Jays' future.
Do you think the Bruce talks are done?
I don't think the Bruce talks are completely dead, because the Blue Jays have made two attempts now to try and get Bruce in the last 2 weeks. Clearly, he's someone that they like, that they have an affinity for and a belief in. And the Reds are in the salary dump mode, so they're motivated to move him. And if as long as they're motivated to move him, and the Blue Jays can. Apparently, they're going to want to find a taker for Michael Saunders under that scenario. As long as they can find a taker for Michael Saunders, a deal is surely possible.
Well, we will look forward to reading about it from you on sportsnet.ca. Thanks a lot, Shai. I appreciate the time.
My pleasure.
That's it for this week on At the Letters. Thanks for listening. Thanks, of course, to Arden. Thanks to Shai for joining us and talking Blue Jays. Keep coming to sportsnet.ca for all things spring training. Arden and Shai have blanket coverage of everything going on down there right now. I'll join them over the weekend, and there will be even more coverage at that point. In the meantime, please rate and review on iTunes and hit us up on Twitter. Let us know any feedback you have. We would love to hear from you on that front. That's it for this week on At the Letters.